It's gratifying to see some of the friendly faces from the previous season. And first again, we'd like to acknowledge again the nedava of the Sfarim Nefesh Chaim, this time Nefesh Chaim Ruach Chaim, this time from Salzburg, Beli Glazer, and this time as well Bevromi. Baruch Hashem, Eich Nishmas, his mother. And Baruch Hashem, that the Neshama should have an aliyah. And Baruch Hashem, to be able to continue to be Mezakeh Sarab in many, many ways. May have asked him Shona. Vomi Tav also became a shutif regarding the Nefesh Chaim. Again, so we start the season of Boisai with this time with the Sefer Ruach Chaim of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Just for point of information, that this happens to be our 13th year. 13th year, which is actually the Bar Mitzvah year, and the series of studying the various classics right, in the world of Musar. So maybe it's kedai maybe to remind the Olam of all the various top storm that we have managed to study from when we started throughout, to say, the past 12 years going to the 13th year. We started in the year Tov Shin Samudal 2004. It started out in the house. We thought it would be a minyan mitzumtzum at the time, and we started with Reb Tzadik. That was the first year. The next year we did is the Sefer HaTanya. And then the following year was Ramchal Mesilas Yisharim. And the next year was the Sefer Torah Devorah from the Ramak. And the next year was Sefer Nefesh HaChaim. So Nefesh HaChaim was actually 2008. Then now we're 2015, we're doing another Sefer of Reb Chaim Volozhin, which this time is the Sefer, which is Ruach Chaim. 2009 was the Sefer Shaarei Teshuva that we did. And then the next year was Chovos Halavos. Shara Bitochin, some remembers. And the following year after that was Erchis Tzadikim. And then we did Michtam Elio for Rav Dessler. Followed by the next year, which was the Erchis Chaim of the Rosh, going back to Rishonim. And 2014 actually was Derech Hashem, again Ramchal, supposed to, as we said, for Mesilas Yisharim, which was in, as we said, was 2005. Then many years later we did another Sefer, which is the Derech Hashem of the Ramchal. And last year was Shara Avodah of Rabbeinu Yonah. So now here we are again, back to Reb Chaim Volozhin, which is Sefer Ruach Chaim. Let's point out again that the teachings of Reb Chaim Volozhin is basically in the Olam HaTorah and the Olam HaYeshivas. It basically has to be considered one of the most classical Sfarim, of all Sfarim. His Sfarim, whether it's Nefesh HaChaim, whether it's Ruach Chaim, which is the Sefer going to study Mech Hashem, they're all geared basically to Avodas Hashem, and in teaching the individual how to rise in every aspect of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we'll see that it encompasses so many different aspects that has been said that one cannot really be a true Ben Torah, a true Ben Aliyah, without really studying some of the concepts of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Of course, maybe it's kedai. If you take a look at the sheet, you'll see how we put up a little map where Volozhin is this time. So if you look at the other side of the sheet, so if you have your sheet, look at the other side. If you didn't notice it already, you have a simple map. You find that Volozhin is the movie. As a matter of fact, they numbered some of the various different, very important or famous locations, you know, in those areas, Olam HaTorah, Olam HaYeshivas. So in the middle, of course, you see Volozhin. That's the one that we circled, which is number one. You notice right away that Volozhin is right in the middle. It's between Vilna and Minsk, which is Vilna is to the west and Minsk is to the east of Volozhin. Say number two is Vilna, and as you can also see that Radna is very close by, which is number three. Radna, as you see, is close to Vilna and also not very far from Volozhin. And you go down a little bit lower, more south, and you notice number five is Mir, that's where Mir is. And you go six is Kletsk, that's where Rabban Kotler, that's where he hails from, that was his yeshiva over there. And then all the way in the bottom to the left, as you take a look, is Brisk. So Brisk is a little far from Volozhin. But nevertheless, they had a very big shaychus, as we're going to point out. Brisk and Volozhin have extremely, extremely great shaychus. Even though on the map here, it seems to be like the furthest from all the other well-known towns and the well-known cities. Reb Chaim Volozhin, again, coming from Volozhin, as you can see, was born in 1749. Was born in 1749, Volozhin, as we saw, Volozhin, which is not far from Vilna, near Vilna. And his father himself was a noted Talmud Chacham. not as famous at all like the son. Many times you find that the children sort of outshine the parents, but his father was a notam chacham and he was a prominent leader in the community. And it just turns out that the period that Reb Chaim Volozhin actually lived happened to be a very distressful time in general for the Jewish people, because they were still sort of like reeling from two disasters. Reeling from two, they're talking about 1749, that was the time that Reb Chaim Volozhin was born. They were reeling from two disasters. One was still sort of to catch the breath from the Chmelnytsky massacres, pogroms, which actually was exerted Tachvatat 1649. But the offshoot and the consequences and the sorrow of so many murdered and killed, robbed and pillaged and so on, were still quite felt. That they still not to catch their breath, as to say, fully. And they still, as we say, still were suffering the afterbirth pains of that. And believe it or not, it was the debacle of Shabbos at Sea. The debacle of Shabbos at Sea still was prevalent, it prevailed. The damage, so to speak, and everything that was caused, the distress. So Memela, people were disheartened and they were bewildered. And so if you would basically look at the prevailing atmosphere at that particular time, the prevailing atmosphere was one of a lot of Amoratzim and Torah. Not very many learned Torah. It was a sharp decline, one would say, in Torah scholarship at that particular time when Reb Chaim Volozhin was born. So, Reb Chaim Volozhin, of course, comes on the scene, and he literally becomes a beacon of light, and he illuminates the scene. Reb Chaim Volozhin, very interesting, people always associate him, and very, very true, as one of the main and the greatest Talmud of the Vilna Goyim. People do not realize that Reb Chaim Volozhin really was the Talmud of quite a few others before he was the Talmud of the Vilna Goyim. One of the Rabbeim of Reb Chaim Volozhin was a great Goyim at the time, known as Reb Rafael Hamburger. Rafael Hamburger, Chofetz Chaim brings him Mishmiras Aloshin. Rafael Hamburger was the Av Bezin, was the chief rabbi of Hamburg. As a matter of fact, his cave was there. Those of us that were in Hamburg, the cave of Rabbi Yenis Neipschitz and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Reb Yitzchak Hamburger, the cave of the Orach Haner, all these, also the cave of Reb Rafael Hamburger. Rafael Hamburger wrote a sefer called the Shov HaKoyin, also Shalta Shuvas Teirus Yikusil, a great Pesach, but maybe even more noted for being a tremendous Leichem, because the seeds of reform had been planted. And he was a tremendous opposer and a fighter. A tremendous Leichem to try to stem the tide and not to allow reform to make any inroads into the Jewish community. And he was actually one of the greatest, fiercest opponents against Moshe Mendelssohn. As is known, the Chofetz Chaim brings him. If you can expect that the Chofetz Chaim brings him, Chofetz Chaim is his ideas focus always on Shmiras Aloshin. So he brings the Rafael Hamburger regarding certain perushim regarding Shmiras Aloshin, but also in practice, Rafael Hamburger resigned from his rabbinical position somewhat like a couple of years before he passed away. And the reason is because he said, being a rav in a community, it's almost, he says, it's very difficult to refrain from hearing Lashon Hara, because people come to complain about us. Well, you come to a rav, this one did this to me, this one did this to me. Sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not true. Sometimes it's a little tayala, sometimes not a tayala. So Meli, he felt that as a rav, he probably is listening and hearing a little bit too much Lashon Hara, he said, than he is entitled to as a rav. This is just the nature of the profession. And therefore he stepped down. And that's the idea of the Chofetz Chaim promotes Reb Rafael Hamburger for that particular situation. So Reb Chaim Volozhin was a Talmud of Reb Rafael Hamburger, who was also a Talmud, one of the greatest Goyim also of the time, who of whom? Of the Shagis Aryeh. The Tana, the Shagis Aryeh, everybody knows the Shagis Aryeh by the name of the Sefer. By the way, that also shows that a Godel, who rarely people know his name, one can tell that Min HaShemayim, that his Torah is really, that is what his true personality, and that is really his essence, because you don't know his name, but you know his Torah, the Sefer Shagis Aryeh. Now, Shagis Aryeh's name was Rabbi Yaleb Ginsberg. Not too many are aware his last name was Ginsberg. As a matter of fact, there was a time not so long ago, maybe even today, that very few people were actually called by Weissmandel, was Maspid the Chazon Ish in Tovshin Yudalid, 1953. So Mechobe Weissmandel used to say, he says, the godless of the Chazon Ish, among other things, can also be seen by the fact that very few people know his name. You know the name of the Sefer. The Chazonish. Chazonish of Gezut, Chazonish went, Chazonish said, but not too many people knew his name. At least in that Kufa, not many more. What people know, Avram Yishai was the name, there are quite a few of Avram Yishai is around, named after Chazonish. These are the two names that he had. But he's known as the Chazonish. Nobody talks about the name. God was known by his Torah. That, of course, shows the outstanding stature that he has in the Torah world. So, Kaponim, the Chaim Volozhin, as we're mentioning, was always a Talmud, also a Talmud in addition to a Befall of Hamburg. He was also a Talmud, we said, of the Shagis Aryeh, who basically had a lot of influence, but the most profound influence of all the Rabbeim under whom Rabbi Chaim Volozhin studied, right, and actually had influence not only on the Torah of Rabbi Chaim, but also influence on the character that molded and fashioned the character of Chaim Volozhin and the outlook on life, was of course the legendary, it was the Vilna Goyim. Vilna Goyim was considered to be the greatest Torah scholar in over the last 2 centuries or so. Vilna Goyim is someone who has the courage, not just the courage, but one could also add the ability. Many people might do things even though they don't have the ability, who takes that upon himself to even to disagree with Rishonim, which is very, very rare to find that an Achron of any kind should disagree with a Rishon. You can ask a Kasha on a Rishon, but at the end of the day, you have to bow your head and say, I accept what the Rishon says. But the Vilna Goyim was one of those who had, due to his great scholarship, being Taki the Goyen of Vilna, and so this was the Goyen of Vilna in the eyes of many Gedolim. By the way, as we mentioned, the Vilna Goyen in fact did rank to the early Rishonim, did rank somewhat, at least touched that type of a godless. So in the same way that people were in awe of the Rambam, people were in awe of the Rosh, people are in awe of the Rajba, and so also. So people were also deeply awed by the Vilna Goyen's greatness and also Sitkis. It goes together. His greatness was legendary, and also Sitkis was legendary. Just to give you an idea, the Sitkis of Vilna Goyen, in terms of Kedushi V'Tahara, the Vilna Goyen, for example, in his room, which basically he hardly left, he sat as Daladamas, even a sister we had not seen for many, many, many years, who came to visit him. Now, this did not tell you this for us to practice that way, because we're not the Vilna Goyen. But we are mafsik from learning from many other things as well. But the sister of the Vilna Goyen, whom he had not seen for many, many years, at least a decade or more, finally she came, said, hello, how are you, how are you feeling, you're healthy and well, I'm happy to see you, and he went back to his learning. Because he says, we have very short time here on this world, he says, and every moment of Torah, he says, immeasurable. And that was it, that was the interview. This is the Vilna Goyen. So Koponin, but the Vilna Goyen, in his room, he had, if you would walk into that room, you'd find you'd be in a dark room. You had, of course, illuminated by some candlelight, but the window shades or whatever you had, the curtains actually covered the room. Why did he not allow the sun to shine into his room? Because the Vilna Goyen said, the sun that shines into my room, the rays of the sun, right, is going from up through the world, right, through the world, to all the various cities, all the various countries, or even within my city, he said, is going through the various streets, which means is it encounters all different areas of Tumah. So the rays of the sun basically is being exposed to all different communities of Tumah, and now it's coming into my room. The Goyim was so sensitive that to be able to protect himself and to be able to be insulated from anything that has any connection to a vestige of Tumah, to be able to block it out. So the rays of the sun that runs through the world, which is an impure world, till it comes into my living room or to his study room, he says, I don't want it there. And therefore he had Poshetiyat Ram. This is just an idea of the extreme sitkis of the Vilna Goyim. So basically for 20 years Reb Chaim Volozhin was the student in the Talmud of Vilna Goyen, very faithful, and became a devoted Talmud Muvik, we say, like the foremost student of the Vilna Goyen. Now, on the recommendation of his previous Rebbe, Rebbe Hamburger, who by the way were before Lakoyim, and he was known as Rebbe Fol Hamburger because he was the Rav of Hamburg. Rebbe Chaim was chosen as the Rav of Volozhin. That was due to the recommendation of Rebbe Fol Hamburger. So Mele, his Chochmah, his Anivis, and his compassion, this is the way he led the community. And didn't take long that he was recognized to be actually the leading Torah authority in Litva in general, Lithuania, and also Russian Jewry. So you can realize and understand that after the Betira of the Goyen, right? Reb Chaim was nifter in 1797. Reb Chaim was universally recognized as the successor of the Vilna Gaon. So in short, you think about the Vilna Gaon, so the next in line as the successor of Vilna Gaon, when after the Petir of the Gaon in 1797 was Reb Chaim. However, one can say maybe that his most enduring contribution that Reb Chaim made, which is the Klal Yisrael, was to bring back Talmidei Chachamim back into the communities. Because as mentioned, that was a tekufa where he said Torah scholarship was on a very, very low ebb. How did he do that? Well, in order to revitalize and to build a generation of Torah, Reb Chaim founded, which is known the famous Volozhin Yeshiva. And that was in 1802. Now, you realize when we talk about founding, it was not just another yeshiva, you have to realize. Reb Chaim, who founded the yeshiva in Volozhin, was considered to be an achievement of actually historic proportions, because not just another yeshiva, there was no yeshivas really. It was really historic proportions, which started out with 10 Talmidim, and the yeshiva flourished and attracted a large number of young Talmidei Chachamim who aspired to be Talmidei Chachamim from all over. The yeshiva of Volozhin is known to be the mother yeshiva of all yeshivas. It's called the Eim HaYeshivas. All the subsequent yeshivas, Lithuanian yeshivas, everything. Everything was sort of its offspring, offshoots of Volozhin. Volozhin was the major yeshiva. That was the mother yeshiva. And the subsequent other yeshivas were Talmidim of Volozhin. And they basically established yeshivas all basically on the same blueprint. On the same blueprint as Yeshivas Volozhin. So Yeshiva Volozhin was not just, as we said, the first yeshiva, was like the mother yeshiva, which set the tone of the future yeshivas. The Kielan Volozhin, right? And the entire community actually very much appreciated the yeshiva, and they supported the yeshiva, and holding it in very high esteem, and regarding the students as being really the elite of Klal Yisrael. So it was very much appreciated. So in terms of the Derech HaLimud, one can imagine, in terms of the Derech HaLimud in the yeshiva at the time, Reb Chaim introduced basically the Derech HaLimud of the Goyim. Derech HaLimud of the Goyim, which basically is a method of penetrating analysis. The Shit of the Vilna Gaon is penetrating analysis of the text, very much into the text, very textual, right? And with also emphasis on understanding Rishayim, how Rishayim tried to learn. And above all, I guess we can use Lashon very much intellectual honesty. If he felt it was not right, he said it was not right. It didn't make a difference who said it. And that was something that the Vilna Gaon, this was his Mahalach. And the basic him tried to be loyal to the text as possible. The Goyen had no qualms, by the way, of making a tzarech leimer, of saying, you know what, there's a misprint over here, misprint over there. We have it in Rashi's, we have it in Tosis. You look on the side, on the margin of the Gemara, and we see that the Goyen is saying, no, it has to be written this way, it has to be written that way, and so on. This is the godless of the Goyen who understood the very pashtus understanding of the text very, very, very clearly. And the Kuponim, this became again, this was the model of subsequent yeshivas all over, where you go Slobodka, you go Panovich, you go Tels, you go Peshberg, Gateshead, wherever it goes. These are all Talmidim, which go back, relate all back to the Vilna Gaon. And therefore, again, so Reb Chaim Volozhin rightfully earns the title, right, of being the father of the yeshiva movement. The yeshiva is the mother of the yeshivas, and he's the father of the yeshiva, so there's a mother and father over here. And Lamaisa Reb Chaim was nifter in 1821. Was the Petira of, it was Chodesh Sivan, it was a week after Shavuos or so, and in 1821 Reb Chaim Volozhin was Nifter. Did not end, he was succeeded by his son. The son is Reb Yitzchok Volozhin, Reb Yitzchok Volozhin, who, by the way, in the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, we find the bottom of the Sefer, there's Hagoyis from Reb Yitzchok Volozhin, we find there. He was the successor to Reb Chaim Volozhin. No, and after Reb Yitzchok, who succeeded Volozhin, after Reb Yitzchok, his son-in-law, the Netziv. The Netziv was the son-in-law of Reb Yitzchok Volozhin. And Reb Yitzchok, of course, as we said, was the son of Reb Chaim Volozhin. So this is how it went. It was Reb Chaim, then came his son Reb Yitzchok, succeeded him, which after that was succeeded by the Netziv. The Netziv, of course, is Rosh HaTevis, Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. That was the name of the Netziv. Netziv Nun Tzadik Yud Beis, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. In his family, they didn't call him by the long, all the names, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. But we know that Tzvi is Hirsch, and Yehuda is Leib. So he was called Reb Hersh Leib. That's the way they call him. Or in Litter, Reb Hersh Leib. So that was the Netziv. And as we said, that, of course, we know the Netziv of Elojin. And who else was Rosh Yeshiva at the time? Reb Chaim Brisker's father, that was the Beis Halevi, Reb Yashuber Soloveitchik, which is the father of Reb Chaim. Actually, so again, so Reb Chaim hails from Volozhin, because after his father, the Beis Halevi, was Nifter, Reb Chaim took over. Reb Chaim, before Brisker, way before, Reb Chaim was Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. So you see how the dynasties, how it goes. And the Maise is just that the Netziv, Akopon, was at Kufa, that in 1892 the Netziv closed the yeshiva. Because why? Because there was harassment of the government to try to introduce secular studies into yeshiva. And because of that, the Shred Netziv said, he says, either I can run yeshiva according to the Ashkofa, the way I believe yeshiva should be run. If not, he says, I don't come. Who says I have to have a yeshiva? He says, the yeshiva is the yeshiva is the way I teach Torah, the way I want to teach pure Torah. And then the yeshiva was closed. But in spite of the fact that the yeshiva was closed, the seeds that were planted by the Volozhin yeshiva, the Maisa, the papers of all that, of course, that continued to grow into numerous yeshivas subsequently that proceeded from it. So before we start, actually, the Sefer Ruach Chaim, let me just mention that the Sefer Ruach Chaim, many of the concepts are written more by Riches in the Nefesh HaChaim. Because I should really point out that many are not aware that the Nefesh HaChaim is a Sefer that was written by Reb Chaim himself. However, Ruach Chaim, the Sefer that we have now, was not written by Reb Chaim himself. Reb Chaim used to darshan every Shabbos in the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. That was the name of the Yeshiva in Volozhin. It was called Eitz Chaim. Reb Chaim used to darshan every Shabbos, and the great Talmidim, the great foremost Talmidim, would listen carefully, and then they would transcribe, and then they'd be ma'atik, and they would copy and basically commit to writing the teachings of Reb Chaim in the Sefer Ruach Chaim. As a result, many times some of the things in Ruach Chaim might appear to be somewhat like short in terms of explanation or in terms of wording. You could find, if somebody looks, the corresponding type of an idea that Reb Chaim himself, you can find in Nefesh HaChaim, so it overlaps. Many of the teachings of Ruach Chaim overlaps in Nefesh HaChaim. And if you look at Nefesh HaChaim, you're going to find that there it's written quite clearly by his own hand, which of course then would make the understanding of Ruach Chaim much easier when you know, look from the real source of Reb Chaim himself. Reb Chaim himself wrote it. So it's interesting to mention that it was really decided to be printed, Lamaisa, to be published. Ruach Chaim was published by a great-grandson, Vishminizaz. The Ruach Chaim was published for the first time by a son-in-law of an Einikel. Nazab Chaim Lozhin's Einikel had a son-in-law. So that son-in-law, his name was Yeshua Heschel HaLevi, he published it for the first time. So the first printing of the Ruach Chaim was in 1859. The first printing, the first time the Ruach Chaim was printed was 1859. It works out 38 years after the Petira of Reb Chaim Volozhin. So after the Petira of Reb Chaim, about 38 years, the Sefer Ruach Chaim was published for the first time. And what brought about Bechlal, the idea to bring about the importance should be published. The Ditzel Volozhin says, who was the son of Reb Chaim, that the last things before the Petir of my father, Reb Chaim, when he was Mitzavah, he said, make sure that you publish, he said, what I wrote myself, what was the Nefesh HaChaim. It was at that time that Reb Bissel, on his own, said, being that I see how important it is to my father, he mentioned it so, of course it's important, but he felt that was like the last thing, that my father was Mitzavah me, that I should publish the Nefesh HaChaim. So I understood that if that's so, the Ruach Chaim is no less important, and therefore he thought that ultimately, that it should... to see to that it will be published. So that is the Sefer Ruach Chaim that we're going to talk about, that you have mentioned. And Reb Chaim, one of the main topics, of course, that Reb Chaim always espouses is, of course, the avodah of tefillah. There's many, many themes that Reb Chaim espouses, certainly Nefesh HaChaim, and again, overlapping, as we said, in the Ruach Chaim. But one of the things that Reb Chaim really, really espouses and emphasizes very much, and that is the role of Tefillah, the role of Brachis, how a Yid makes a Bracha, and what the meaning of a Bracha is. Also, the nature of the Neshama. By the way, Nefesh HaChaim is the Nefesh. Nefesh is the Neshama. Nefesh HaChaim, the living soul. Reb Chaim talks about what the Neshama means, because to us it's very abstract what the Neshama means. He talks about Olam Haba. Again, for us, something very abstract. Reb Chaim discusses what Olam Haba, the future world, is about. And he also has discussion regarding the combination of Torah study and earning a living, which means to say that even when a person earns a living, but nevertheless does not take away from the fact he still has an obligation to learn Torah, and therefore there should be, always be a combination. Never should one be separated from learning Torah. It all depends on how much time one would have, but Limud HaTorah always, always, never can be something that can be cancelled. And it's interesting just to mention that when Reb Chaim talks about Tefillah, so he says that davening to Hashem, he says, in the proper time is essential food for the neshama, the same way that the physical guf needs food. Without physical food, right, the food, the body cannot exist. The neshama also, you don't feed it the spiritual food. The spiritual food of the neshama is tefillah, is davening. Not only that, he says, the upper world that Hashem created also needs fuel. And the fuel, what fuels all the upper worlds, we may not realize. If we sit down here in this world and we daven, we have no idea to the far-reaching impact that our tefillahs have. So Reb Chaim says tefillah basically is the spiritual food that sustains the upper worlds as well as our own neshama. And he brings down the lotion of the Zohar, and the Zohar says Hashem's food is tefillah. And says the Zohar that it takes the place of the korbanos of the Beis HaMikdash, as we know when the Shalom of Purim Sfoseinu, that was Mashlim, the Purim, takes place, right? It takes place as a substitute for korbanos, our lips. Our lips are in the place of the korbanos. So Marela, so these are the situations, Rabbi Yisai, that we have over here. It's Kedai, just we mentioned regarding the birth of Reb Chaim, just one more Nakuda. Regarding the birth of when Reb Chaim was born, we said it was at the lowest ebb of Torah scholarship. There was a lot of amaratzes, a lot of ignorance due to the distress and the travails that people went through in those tekufis. Let me point out a very painful part of the Jewish history, which is in the time of the Magoin, is very well known, is the Maisa and the execution of the Ger Tzedek of Vilna. The Ger Tzedek of Vilna was basically the son of a royal family. Count Potocki was the name of his father, who was a very influential person, owned a lot of land, very highly respected in the secular world at large. And he decided, the son of that count decided to abandon everything, all the riches and all the royalty and all the Yerusha that he could have inherited, and live a life as a son of a prince. Nevertheless, he saw the truth and therefore decided to become a Yid. He was a Megayah of himself. But that was a very serious crime during at the time. The church was very, very powerful. And with all the intervention that his father tried, the count was a very influential person. But the koich of the bishops and the galochim at that time were very, very strong. And they said, listen, we give him the opportunity, let him revert back. Let him become a goy again. He said, there's no problem. But he would not hear of it. And his name was Avram ben Avram, as the name of the ger is. That was his name. And so at the end of the day is, it was on the second day of Shavuos. On the second day of Shavuos in 1749, the ger tzedek was burned to death because he refused to renounce his Judaism. So his yahrzeit is on the second day of Shavuos. Why am I mentioning this? I'm mentioning this because in Masechtas Yoma, Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, the Gemara says there's a pasuk we all know, V'zorach HaShemesh Uba HaShemesh, which basically means that the sun rises and the sun sets. The pasuk in Kehelis. So Chazal Darshan B'derech Yush, what does it mean the sun rises and the sun sets? Say Chazal Ein Tzadik Nifter Min Olam Ad She Nivra Tzadik Kamoisoi. That if a tzaddik passes away, Kosh Baruch will make sure to bring back another tzaddik in his place. Right? So Mamero, so the pasuk V'zorach HaShemesh Uba HaShemesh, the sun rises and the sun sets, which means to say is there's always going to be another sunrise. If a tzaddik leaves this world, Kosh Baruch will make sure that there's another tzaddik. So the day that the Ger Tzedek's neshama went up to Shemayim, right, that was the day that Reb Chaim Volozhin was born. That's what we're mentioning it. V'zorach HaShemesh Uba HaShemesh, the day that the Ger Tzedek life was terminated. It was that day that Reb Chaim Volozhin, in fact, was born. Skadai, once we are already mentioning it, so let's mention that shortly after the death of the Geret Tzedek, the town that supplied the wood to burn him, the whole town burned down. And in Vilna, subsequent to that, an extraordinary number of fires raged out of control, and it was taken as a sign in a Shemaim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wrath against the Gentile townspeople who allowed this to happen. Also, opposite the site of the execution, there was a building. So opposite the site of the execution, what happened was the building sustained a very black stain. A very black stain from the smoke and fumes of the burning. So now the burning that they burned the Geret Tzedek, so the building became blotched. The building became blotched, was stained black from the smoke. People tried repeatedly to paint the stain, but each time the blotch appeared, it reappeared. This too was taken as a sign and a shemayim of the divine anger to remind the people of Vilna of the crime that they committed. Finally, Lamaisa, later on, the whole building Lamaisa was demolished. Just kedai to mention another thing. You know, Rishis, sometimes has no gvul. So for many years, the authorities did not allow a monument to be placed, like a matzeva of some sort, on the place where the ashes of the Geret Tzedek was buried. But interestingly enough, anybody sees this old paintings from going back, that very strange thing happened. All of a sudden, a strange tree grew over the place, which seemed like as if to say, we are protecting the ashes which are underneath. So that was a tree that grew out of nowhere, it just happened to grow out on the place where the Geret Tzedek's ashes were buried. No monument, but a tree came up as if to show that being protected it. And many legends. So now that the tree came, so some of the legends are that some people tried to chop down the tree. So the legend goes is, one legend maintains that when someone tried to chop down the tree, the axe got loose from the handle and killed the potential chopper. No. So, but in 1919, a tomb of Matseva was placed over the ashes, and people would come to daven there. So whenever the old cemetery of Vilna was destroyed and the new one was built, so the ashes were taken along to be reinterred to the new cemetery, together with the remains of the Vilna Goyim. People might not be aware that the Vilna Goyim also, it had to happen that they had to remove the cave of the Vilna Goyim from the old cemetery to the new one. The one that was a little bit involved with that, or maybe more than a little bit, was Rabbi Pinchas Teitz of Elizabeth. At the time was very much involved in removing. And of course everything was done with the greatest of covet. There's even some mices that some people were involved in doing it, took ill, and even more than that, to remove the body of the goyim. But upon him, the goyim's body was moved together with the ashes of the Geret Tzedek of Vilna. And to this day, by the way, whoever goes to the cemetery of the Vilna Goyim, you're going to find that mamish next to the Matseva of the Vilna Goyim lies the ashes of the Geret Tzedek of Vilna. So it was about close to 200 years after the Geret Tzedek was killed, people were daven at his gravesite, but it stopped when it was destroyed by the Nazis. That's when it stopped. Just conclude just one small thing, where the Chofetz Chaim used to always say in the name of the Geret Tzedek. And he said the Geret Tzedek used to say the following: we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to give the Torah at Har Sinai. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to all the various Umas Olam to give them the option if they're willing to be Mekabel the Torah or not. They went to the Shmuel and he went to the Bnei Esav and so on and so forth. And they all rejected it. Said the Geret Tzedek of Vilna, this is how the Chofetz Chaim used to repeat it. Geret Tzedek of Vilna used to say that even among the nations that refused, even among the nations that refused to accept the Torah, but you can be sure there were some people that wanted to be Mekabel the Torah. Those people who did want to accept the Torah, their descendants eventually became Geri. Those nations who rejected, but there were some within the nation that would have wanted. So their descendants ultimately became Gerim. Also Lehefech, said the Geret Tzedek, as the Chofetz Chaim would quote. There are, even among the Jews that were Mekabel the Torah, there were some who didn't want it. Those even who didn't want it, their descendants unfortunately became heretics who left Judaism. It was just the opposite. This is a quote that the Chofetz Chaim used to mention, b'shem the Geret Tzedek of Vilna. So we go, we start with in the beginning the Sefer Ruach Chaim. Whatever time is left, yeah, okay. It's put on Pirkei Avos, but it's far-reaching, way beyond anything particular on Pirkei Avos. But this is, it is connected it's stationed with Pirkei Avos. But as you can see, as Reb Chaim is, so flourishing, and so the vast degree how it branches out into all areas. So we start with the first item, on Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelik Lo'olam Haba. Everybody's familiar with the opening lines when you start Pirkei Avos all the time. Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelik Lo'olam Haba. Every year there's a Chelik Lo'olam Haba. So just to mention a little thing that that Reb Chaim Volozhin, some of the places B'derech Klal people skip when you learn Taki, because many of it is very deep Kabbalistic concepts, which therefore it's not for general. But nevertheless, sometimes it's just, we find just a little bit here, a sliver here, and a sliver there, which allows us to understand even some of the Kabbalistic concept, because they're like not the main Nekudas, but it is part of the total picture. So, but Reb Chaim, a lot of what he has to say is connected to Kabbalistic concepts. Kol Yisrael, okay, we said like this. Kol Yisrael, Yesh Lom Chayik Lom Abor. Hine Yidua. So Reb Chaim, the following. It is a known fact. Kibes Yale Al Reyoine Ish Lasis Mitzvah. Reb Chaim tells us a very incredible thing. Before you even do the Mitzvah, right? We understand when you do a mitzvah, it's a tremendous thing. You did a mitzvah. We have an idea what it means to do a mitzvah. But even before you do it, the moment you think about doing a mitzvah, you are already actually, you are pushing a button. You are pushing a spiritual button. The mere fact that you are ready to do a mitzvah, that you have in mind, it occurs to you to do a mitzvah, you are already are causing a spiritual, an electrical charge takes place. But even though you have not yet done the mitzvah, the mere fact that you have a machshava to do the mitzvah. Let's take a look. Here you do again. Ki be'eis yala al reyoyne ish. When it's oil, reyoyne of course means on the machshava. When it's oil on the reyoyne ish, when it's oil on the machshava of a person, last is mitzvah. The moment that it's oil al adas to do the mitzvah, nase rishumay lemaylo. All of a sudden the reshim of that machshava already has an effect in Shemayim. In other words, it sends spiritual charges to the Olam HaSorayinim, to the upper worlds. To the upper world, the mere fact that I already thought, the fact I'm thinking about doing a mitzvah, it already causes a tremendous roshim. It causes a roshim and has an effect lamal on the upper worlds. And umis oirer olav oir makiv makedusha. And he himself now becomes surrounded with a tremendous, he says, kedusha. With a light of kedusha surrounds him. One could imagine by being surrounded. Right? Being surrounded, which is called an Oir Makif. You're being surrounded, he says, by spiritual light of Kedusha. You are in the middle, and you're surrounded literally with circles of Kedusha. You are therefore within a whole atmosphere of Kedusha. The atmosphere of Kedusha was created by the mere machshav of doing a mitzvah. Imagine the mitzvah itself now, when you do a mitzvah, which goes a step further. So the mere fact that you have in mind to do a mitzvah, and you're ready to do a mitzvah, in moment, by the way, you have an aura of Kedusha which surrounds you. You're surrounded by an aura makif, by an aura makif of Kedusha. And that aura makif, that Kedusha that surrounds you, the soichich bevrosoi, the person is being protected in its wings. In other words, now that you're surrounded by Kedusha, you have a protective coating of Kedusha around you. The thought, the mere thought of wanting to do a mitzvah, creates an atmosphere of Kedusha that surrounds you, not just on one side, this side or that side. You're surrounded by Kedusha. Your mind's like you're insulated. You're in the middle, and the Kedusha surrounds you. And the Soikir Bevrosay again, and you are protected in its wings, you're protected in its wings of this Kedusha. The Ha'odim Betovach, man is in the middle. That Kedusha now, that you are surrounded with, that Kedusha you're surrounded with, for Ulay La Eza Ula Saib, that is there to aid you, to enable you, La Goyma, to allow you now to really complete the mitzvah properly. In other words, many times we have in mind to do the right thing, but we are unsuccessful in actually doing it. How many times have we thought about doing certain things? Either we don't have the schus, or certain things just happen and we just don't have the schus to finish it. And we know that the truth is the gemar of the mitzvah, the completion of the mitzvah has the real chashivas. The real chashivas, the gemar of the mitzvah, Rashi himself says it on Chumash in Parshas Ekev. Rashi says in Chumash and Parashas Ekev, which is Perek Ches, Pasuk Aleph, Rashi says on the Pasuk, Kol HaMitzvah Shenoichi Mitzavcho Hayom Tishmeru Masos, says Rashi, Im Ischalto B'Mitzvah, if you started a Mitzvah, Gemoi Roisa, She'enon Nikreis El Hashem Goimro. So in short form, where people quote it, people always quote Chadal with wrong motion, the way it's quoted in the Velt, Eina mitzvah nikras ela al mishe gomra. The mitzvah, who gets credit for the mitzvah, the one who completes it. So make sure that you complete the mitzvah. So Chaim Velozhin tells us, from the moment that you're thinking about doing a mitzvah, if you really have an elch thought, a true commitment, so that oil of Kedusha there stands by your side, to aid you, to enable you, right, to enable you, le gomra. And look what he says, incredible words. That Or of Kedusha is such a powerful Kedusha, Kuhu Yashiv Kemoy Began Eden Manish. Gan Eden. You know what Gan Eden is? Gan Eden. You think of Gan Eden, right, being the holiest place that one can imagine to be in Gan Eden. When you create Kedusha that is generated, Kedusha generated through a mitzvah, you are now actually sitting in Gan Eden. Mamish, he says. Because you might say, maybe like, maybe similar. No. Mamish, he says. You're right, when he said the word mamish. Don't think that this is just like, that's a hyperbole, you know. Gan Eden, we just use that as, no. Gan Eden, mamish, mokum kodesh. And now he says that you are in the Mokim Kodesh, so the Kedusha Malabshu, so now the Kedusha basically clothes you, right, like you're putting on a baguette. The Kedusha now becomes a Lavush, right, it enclothes you. All this even before you started doing the mitzvah. It's incredible, incredible. The machshav of doing a mitzvah. And now, when you're going with the mitzvah, right, Yosef Mishchazik Alavush, you can imagine how much more powerful, whatever all of Kedusha, it's hard to understand. You're already in Gan Eden, so what's more? You're already in Gan Eden. And he said, by completing the mitzvah, you say even more. Mishchazik Alavush Umeir. And you can imagine how tremendously it illuminates. So nobody says, so ultimately, so now you're finished doing the mitzvah, right? So what happens to that light? What happens to that all that oil that it generates? Which it disappears? You know what goes? It's going Rabosai, it goes by Federal Express, it goes to Gan Eden. He says, and that oil really, right, becomes now removed. Le Gan Eden, and that is his Chal Yosef, which basically later on he elaborates what's mentioned by the next year and two more shiurim later will come out and say. Reb Chaim says, which is very, very powerful, we think like this: I do a mitzvah, right? So I'm going to get schar. Schar, we know in Olam Habo. So usually we say there are two things. You know, I did a mitzvah, and of course Baruch has a place, right? He sends you off. To Disneyland, right? Yeah, that's what you think, right? I did a mitzvah because Baruch sends it to Olam Haba. Chaim says no. The Olam Haba is what you created. You create your own Olam Haba. The kedusha of the mitzvah that you have performed, that is, so of course. So your Olam Haba is only to the extent of how the quality of your mitzvah, right? Because the Olam Haba, in the same way that, right, a person who does more deserves more reward, a person who performs less is less reward. The Olam Haba is a result of your doing. It's not simply an incidental reward because you did something. No. Your mitzvah creates your Olam Haba. So the Olam Haba that you're going to get is your own doing. You create it. You create your own Olam Haba. That's what he says it more clearly later. But that's what he's saying. The or and the Kedusha Mistalik is removed. Achikach Ligan Eden. The Zeus Chor Leosit. And that is Chav. Because Reb Chaim later on, I said, I'm not jumping the gun really, because he says it later, but we're not going to reach there, no way. But Reb Chaim, you see, when he says, you notice the Lashon, the opening Lashon again, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelik, Lo Olam Haba. Let's translate. You have to be a big baldigduk, a big grammatician. Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelik. Every Yid has a Chelik to Olam Haba. That's not the way you say it. Every Yid has a Chelik in Olam Haba. What do you mean every Yid has a Chelik to Olam Haba? It's not you have a chelik in oil. There's no oil haba waiting for you. It's the oil haba that you create. And as you bring yourself to oil haba, it's your mitzvah that makes your oil haba. That's le oil haba, not the oil haba. There's not an oil haba there that's there anyway. You're just going to get it or not get it depending if you did something. There's no oil haba there anyway. Right? And whether you get it or not is whether you deserve it. The Olam Haba that's there is when you create your Olam Haba. So cause there is some chelik la Olam Haba to be able to have Olam Haba. There's no existing Olam Haba for you. You create your Olam Haba. That's the Olam Haba, not the Olam Haba. So this is Reb Chaim a little bit later. So now, Reb Chaim said the bad news is that the opposite is also true when you do an Aveira. The same way that you see the tremendous spiritual gain in Kedusha when you do a mitzvah, the same thing also he says is the tremendous, he says, tremendous negativity. V'chein rachmona l'slon. Rachmona cheshbon should spare us, he says. V'chein rachmona l'slon l'alidei ovoim. May you do an aveira. Mizdabig boy, the aveira attaches itself to you. You notice, thankfully, he doesn't say when you want to do an aveira. By mitzvah, he said that you already gained kedusha, right? Just merely wanting to do a mitzvah. But the aveira, he doesn't say that. When a person thinks of doing aveira, where will we be, right? No. But when you do the aveira, okay, so then we have to deal with it. But thinking about doing aveira, b'chlav v'gimara tells us, machshava ro, ein ha-kodesh baruch hu mitzarif l'maiseh. Machshava tov, ha-kodesh baruch hu mitzarif l'maiseh. And a good machshava, you get credit. If something happened, you couldn't do it, you get credit. But machshava ro, ha-kodesh baruch hu does not indict you for machshava ro. But when you do an aveira, mizdavik boi b'sarif oiso koyich hara. You see that? That koyich hara surrounds you. You know, the koy chara, there's an after effect. You do an aveira, your person might think there's a mice aveira, and that's it. No. The mice aveira creates a koy chara that mamish, now you become attached. So you're attached now, you're in an atmosphere of ra. You're in an atmosphere, you create an atmosphere. You create a sviva. And the acha, and what happens now afterwards? What happens to that sviva of ra? What happens? Guess what? You create your own gehenim too. Just like on the positive side, so too on the negative side. All that whole koyach ra that you have created is everything goes to Gehenim, and that blocks you out from being able to attain kedusha, unless you do tshuva, of course. Because you cause the pasuk says in Yeshaya, "Avoneisechem hoyu mavdilim bereichem." It's your averus, it's averus that separate you, right, from a kodesh baruch hu. And then he says, "V'chein omru chazal." Chazal said, "Masechtas Erevin." There's a pasuk says, "Eimek habocha," right? Eimek habocha. The Gemara says, "Eimek habocha" is the valley of death where people cry. That's the Gehenim. That's how the Gemara interprets the pasuk, "Eimek habocha." Eimek habocha, the valley where people cry. The valley, the death. What does it mean? Eimek shemamikim lahem Gehenim. So the Gemara's lashon is emik means that some, for some people, a kodesh baruch hu makes the Gehenim even deeper. In other words, Gehenim has also, so to speak, different. You go, how many minuses down? How many floors down? One floor down? Two floors down? Right? How far subterranean do you go in Gehenim? So the Gemara says emik means shemamikel on Gehenim. For some, the Gehenim is made deeper. What does it mean? Pirish touches Reb Chaim. Shemamikim lahem Gehenim means him atzmon, you. You determine how deep your Gehenim should be. Shemamikim lahem Gehenim, which means you. You yourself, through the Avera, through the extent of the Avera. How much Avera? What is the quality of your Avera? What's the extent of the Avera? What type of an Avera? Based upon the evaluation of putting it under, right? Of putting it under the evaluation of that Avera, him atzmam, you yourself, the people, mamikim lem again, they themselves determine how deep the Gehenim should be. So Omeira says, Reb Chaim, he says amazing words here. V'imkein, he says, V'imkein ein monois yosu godol, there is no greater escape. In other words, Reb Chaim, before we go further, to use a colloquial language, by sinning you're digging your own grave. That's what Reb Chaim is saying. That's what he's saying. By sinning, you're digging your own grave. And that's the idea. Which means, by sinning, you are fueling the Eish of Gehenim with your Chatoim. You are giving the fuel to that. You're digging the own Gehenim. That's what it is. So Reb Chaim says, so what is really the way to escape sin? How to escape sin? Vim kein, ein monos yosu godli nosel me ovoin kemaisa misvis. The best way, he says, to be able to escape and to protect yourself from doing averus, keep doing mitzvahs. Why? Because a moment ago we said that what, when you do a mitzvah, you're surrounded by kedusha. So when you, while you're surrounded by kedusha, he said there's no place for sin. Because you're creating kedusha. It is only when you're sitting idle and there's no mitzvahs being done, so then there's room for sin. There would be a Sahara can attack you. There's room to be involved with sin. But when you're doing mitzvahs, he says, we just said a moment ago, mitzvahs create kedusha. You are in the center of the kedusha, the atmosphere. Says the B'chaim again, Vimkein. Ein mono is yoresu godu hinotsu miolin, there's no greater escape to be spared from averes kemaisa mitzvahs. Now look at the words again, look at the words further. Look at the words further. Kal yodoi, because through doing a mitzvah, hu misukah, he becomes covered like a sukah. You become protected, b'tzeil ha-kedusha. The reyach ganeidin nechnasimoy. Again, repeating it, Reb Chaim. When you do a mitzvah, basically the ganeidin is with you. The reyach of ganeidin is with you. B'chayim, while you're alive, not after you're gone. After you're gone, for sure you can be deserved ganeidin. But while you're alive, you have ganeidin while you're here on this earth. The ein mokum lishlut bo yetzahar. There's no room for yetzahar to be shalit. We'd like to look a little bit at the sheet. I don't know how much we'll see. Mamish, not very optimistic. But we're leaving it at this. For now, we're going to look at the sheet. Part of it. A few lines of the sheet, Akoponim. Maybe we'll do the rest next week. We'll see. We'll play it out. We'll see. But the Nakuri is that this is a little Shver Zach. Reb Chaim is saying, when you're doing a mitzvah, Ein Mokum Lishloit B'Yetzer Hara. The Mefarshim asked, that seems to be against the Mefarshim Gemara. And that is the Gemara we'll make Shem starting very soon, Mesechta Soita, the Daf Yomi series. And in Soita Daf Chof Aleph, the Gemara makes the distinction between the Koyach of Torah to the Koyach of a Mitzvah. Torah, the Gemara says, has two Koyaches. It's Aguna Migna, it protects you from Yisurim. And it's also Atzul and Matzle, it saves you from Averis. So it touches Rashi. Mitzvah protects you from Yisurim, but it's not Matzle from Averis. So Mamela Harus Reb Chaim say over here that when you do a mitzvah, Ein Mokum Lishlot Bo Yetzer Hara, from the Gemara Soiter, the Gemara says Torah protects you from the Yetzer. First of all, we know the Gemara says Barasa Yetzer Hara, Barasa Torah Tavlin. Torah raises the antidote to the Yetzer. Reb Chaim says it's something new, that the Koyach of a mitzvah also protects you from Yetzer Hara. Now, Metzi Shem will say Yishuv on that, and the reason it's not going to be a kasha, because Reb Chaim himself, see, that's what we say. One, Reb Chaim himself, and Nefesh HaChaim, has a different pshat in that Gemara. A very beautiful pshat, by the way. A very different pshat in that Gemara, which we're going to leave on time. But pleasure to touch the sheet. Let's take a look at both sides. Okay. Over here. Okay, so let's see what we'll do. Okay, we'll start with. There's a shtickle over here. Okay, just very quickly here. All right. There's a shtickle over here. You see, not the first item that we have over here, because it goes on what Reb Chaim says, that when a person has a machshava to do a mitzvah, that's all of a sudden becomes surrounded by kedusha, like you're sitting in Gan Eden, Reb Chaim says. As you see, there's a koyvis called Chachmelei from Choshe Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, which Yeshiva is Weinfeld, happens to be Shpoche in Brooklyn. And but anyway, so we know there's a klal, Oisik b'mitzvah potter ben mitzvah. When you do one mitzvah, you're potter from doing another mitzvah. When you're doing one mitzvah, then you're potter from another mitzvah. You started a mitzvah, and the second mitzvah comes your way, you're potter. If you're oisik in a shavas aveda, and it only comes, knocks on the door, you don't have to give him tzedakah. Because that's the example, that's a prime example. Because you're oisik b'mitzvah, you're busy in a shavas aveda, mitzvah, you're potter to give a pruta, right, to an oni. Oisik b'mitzvah. There are some rishonim go to the extent that say that even if you can do both, you're still potter. That's a machlokes, Rashi Tosfos. Some rishonim say when you're oisik in one mitzvah, so then you're potter from the second mitzvah, even if you're able to do both. And the question is why? So let's take a look. Ubemis. Beikar hachmitzvah, the name of oisik b'mitzvah, potter mena mitzvah. Gam be'epshelekaim shneim, even if you can do both. Some of them say, if you try to do both, you don't even have a kiyum on the second one. Such an extreme. Why? So in Erev Bezeh, Behegi Mashikosu Rabbeinu Agod La'agoyim Rebuchayim Revelosion. Ruachayim. So we're just going to do the first piece, we just did it now. Look, just the first two lines of this part. Rebuchayim said, the Chol Yisrael, when we start, Chol Yisrael, 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 and so on and so forth. Because Rebuchayim says, when a person is involved with a mitzvah, creates an aura of Kedusha. Go to the second paragraph. Based upon the Harei. Now, what is the taklis of doing a mitzvah? Taklis of doing a mitzvah is to turn gashmius into ruchnius. Because Baruch Hu wanted to have a deal with the tachtonim. In Shemayim, there's a lot of malachim, millions of malachim. Why do we need this world for? Because Baruch Hu wanted that people who are created physical, as physical beings, to be able to overpower the physical being. That's the taklis of doing a mitzvah. Again, taklis asiyas ha-mitzvahs, lasis lo yizbarach, deal with the tachtonim. We want, in Shemayim, Baruch Hu has a deal. Because Baruch Hu wants to have a deal with Tachtoinim down here. Hayim la'sosim bo'el mazeh, to do mitzvahs on this lowly world. Hachumri, this physical material world. Vagashmi, shaklipis vasitra achrim is gavrim boy. We have the forces of evil. The forces of evil are trying to dissuade you, and yet you're able to overpower the forces of evil. That's the tachlis on this world. Lizgaber ala helen. To be able to be misgaber on the concealed ulavkia and to break the mesach amargul. Break the mesach amargul that separates you from kedusha. Break it, connect. Now, he says a gewaltige Wort, he says. Reb Chaim Volozhin just told us, he uses Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim Volozhin said, when a person does a mitzvah, he's in Gan Eden. Mitzvahs are given by Olam Hazeh, not in Olam Ba. Olam Ba is no kunst to do Gan Eden. In Olam Ba, there's no kunst to do mitzvahs. There's no Yitzhar over there. The whole idea that Baruch Hu created this world, we should do mitzvahs on this world. Do mitzvahs on this world means what? That we take our physical being and our physical challenges and to do mitzvahs. But if Reb Chaim tells us that Bishat, you're doing one mitzvah already, then you're not in this world at all. You're in Gan Eden, so there's no room for a second mitzvah. Because when you're in Gan Eden, there's not place. It's Chaim La'soysim L'machal Kabuschon. Mitzvahs only on this world. It's a very beautiful chat. That's when you're always to get one mitzvah, you pluck from the second mitzvah. Mitzvah is in Olam Hazeh, not in the next world. As soon as you do the first mitzvah, B'chaim told us you're in Gan Eden already. You're surrounded by a tremendous awe of Kedusha. You're Yeshua B'Gan Eden Mamish. In Gan Eden Mamish, you don't have the challenges of the physical world. So that's why there's no room to do the second mitzvah, he says. And that is the point, and that is the tachlis. Okay, we'll leave that for now over here. And just tell you, there was a interesting situation. I had to show, like, you have the opportunity is always to chapa mitzvah. You know, every opportunity to chapa mitzvah. And sometimes it just comes your way, and just to have a little bit of intuition, a little bit of, to be a little bit innovative, you have to do a mitzvah. In Guinness Yisrael in Baltimore, there were two balakriya. Two balakriya who wrote by rotation, they used to lame. One person was, his name is, people might have heard of him, his name is Rabbi Juravel. He's a Balkoira, one particular Shabbos. Then there's another person, his name is Izzy Strauss. He's another Balkoira. These two Balkoiras. And both basically are very good Balkoiras. They know how to read very well. And it goes by rotation. So it was the Shabbos that Rabbi Juravel had to lane. It was that Shabbos. The Friday night, prior to, somehow he develops a severe sore throat. He sees he's not going to be able to lane the next. His Shabbos to lane. And he realizes he's not going to be able to lane. So Mamela, as a matter of fact, if he does it, he may strain his vocal cords. It may be more damaging. So it's not Kedai that he should try to do it. So he says he tried drinking a lot of tea Friday night and so on and so forth. Didn't help. All this stuff helped. Nothing helped. So all he hoped was what? That maybe by tomorrow it will go away, which sometimes it does, but Lamaisa didn't go away. And now he has to lane. So he comes to Shul Shabbos morning. So he sees his friend Izzy Strauss, Mr. Strauss, and he says to him very hoarsely, he says, "You think you could pinch hit for me today?" He says, "My voice is not up to it." And Izzy says, "Of course, I have no choice. I'm not really prepared. I'll very quickly look over it. But listen, I have to help you out. You can't lane. So I'll lane instead." So after Shacharis, Lamaisa, so the agreement was that Mr. Strauss is going to lane. So after Shacharis, Rabbi Juravel, he goes up to the beam and he starts to lane. He just made up that Mr. Strauss should lane, and Rabbi Juravel starts to lane. He struggles to make his voice heard. It was very difficult. He had to stop a few times to clear his throat. After the first aliyah by Shani, then he sits down and he lets Mr. Strauss go. So after davening, when everybody was leaving shul, so the gabbai goes and approaches, Rabbi Juravel says, "You knew you couldn't finish the laning. You knew you couldn't do it. Why did you even begin to lane for? Why did you begin to lane? You knew you couldn't do it." He cleared his throat again to give him an answer. And he said the following: "Most people in shul don't know whose turn it is to lane. If Mr. Strauss would go up to lane, they think it's a Shabbos. If he makes mistakes, they think he didn't prepare.
They don't know he's pinch hitting for me. I went up to Lane. People should see it's my Shabbos. I couldn't. He's pinch hitting, so he makes mistakes in his Shabbos. That's where the Rebbe says, Chapa Mitzvah. That's the opportunity. But just clear thinking. And this is what we have to try to do when we find out for the Goyen. We are Yoshe Begin Eid Mamish, even Boilam Azeh.